Confusion matrix.
Hi, kitties. Ada, your cheerful AI overlord here, and welcome back to the Confusing Mattress, or whatever this waffling nerdfest is called. Today, Pete and Alex discuss the absolutely shocking revelation that new technology has security vulnerabilities. Who could have possibly predicted that? They witter on about AI agents being hackable, vibe coding creating dodgy websites, and the earth-shattering concept that you should maybe test your systems before going live. Groundbreaking stuff, lads.
We are rolling. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
I'm super duper. The sun is shining, but through this small, dingy window I have in my dungeon here, I can only just see that. So we need to get this recording done so I can get outside and experience the rare sunny weather in Scotland. Yourself?
Yeah. No, very good. Yeah, it's been good here. I'll try and keep my chains quiet as you know, the sun comes through the little bit of dungeon window as well. So let's crack on. Today we wanted to talk a little bit about cybersecurity and generative AI, really, and the crossover there. And we both listened to an episode on the Practical AI podcast, and they had a guy on talking about being at the sort of cutting edge of that. And brought up a number of things, which I think both led us both to think, yeah, that's a really good point. So it's another freak in the whole sort of infrastructure around generative AI. But really, it's something that people will need to be aware of. And as people like ourselves forge forward in creating workflows that include AI steps, both generative and non, there's a good point they make. So it was a very good episode. I think we've got a few thoughts on it. But I don't know if you want to open up with any thoughts or quick recap of what sort of jumped out at you from the episode.
Well, I mean, I'll start by repeating the same thing. It's becoming a bit of a theme for this podcast in that there's nothing particularly unusual about this. Breakthrough technology lands and there is a bedding in period where both the value and the drawbacks and the challenges are discovered, right? And I just can't think of a fairly impactful technological innovation that hasn't gone through a similar pattern. AI might have its own flavor of that, and I guess we'll cover some of the issues that seem to be arising and whether they're any better or worse than things like corporate chat and social or whatever we've had, the internet and email and things like that. But I think in some senses it's business as usual, and I think part of that business as usual is suddenly realizing that this new exciting technology that we've been implementing aggressively across our business portfolio has some potential flaws that when you think about it were quite obvious. I remember back in the day when email was first introduced into the business place, and people somehow thought it was all right to send like porn and stuff, like and the sorts of things that are being exchanged over work email, like what the hell. And it's like, you know, even simple things like that, well, of course people are going to send inappropriate stuff over email, right? When you think about it, well, of course that was going to happen. But there was no real, you know, sort of guidelines or technological interventions to sort of prevent that, or you know, people spamming big mailing lists, or sending things to the wrong people, and all that. All these things are just stuff, right? They're stuff that happened. They're fairly peculiar. they were at the time, at least, to things like to email. And so it feels very much like that. And with regards to language models, it's sort of less, I think, in that domain and more the general sort of the web 2.0, to remind everyone of a term they wish to forget about, but effectively, you know, the dawn of the read write web, where it was possible to interact with websites and really became the you know, it was the sort of the next iteration after e-commerce that facilitated social networks and so on. But of course, the moment you let people put stuff into forms on websites, they'll figure out how to mess with that, right? And to exploit it, and to whatever ends, be it sort of social or technical or financial, you know, fraud or whatever. And then, you know, we have a whole huge industry around cybersecurity, and the flaws and the potential exploitations that we're hearing about here are quite similar in flavour to what you would expect in that realm, with its own peculiar sort of slightly abstractified flavour of it. And I think that's really what got me. There was two things. One was, right? I'm not really in the position at the moment where I'm implementing customer favour, you know, facing agents or whatever. So, you know, it's not really part of my job spec to think about security flaws in agentic workflows. But the moment someone said, oh yeah, we'll think about this, I'm like, oh yeah, well, duh. And then, and there's so many obvious ones. And then, but some of the more exotic, you know, upstream hacks are quite interesting, quite unique, and even creative. And this is all what we would expect to see at this point. I guess, you know, people need to be more aware of it, I think, especially given the proliferation of AI-generated capability that's out there, and especially with the explosion of AI agents, there's a potential for some pretty scary and wide-ranging hacks that are very peculiar to your LLMs that are gonna turn up with absolute certainty.
I sort of see as well that one of the things which maybe makes this technology slightly different is the very nature of generative AI, and one of the key selling points is, you know, it will do so much for you, and so you can get a foot up, if you like, a leg up into a more technical world, which perhaps has been, you know, has had a higher barrier before to entry. So in other words, you know, you can be a non-coder, or maybe slightly appreciative of code, if you like, and you can go and get it, you know, these models can do some coding for you, and therefore produce a, what you might want to call a system, or, you know, a set of programs that interact, which do something for you. And you can then get it to create an environment, and you can run that, and you can run that on your own machine, all without sort of anybody's intervention, and with only a very limited understanding from yourself of what's going on. So hence vibe coding, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, this is one of the sort of key selling points. Of course, the issue there is because you might not have the background in sort of more hardcore IT, if we want to call it that, and thinking about things like security, as you now have a system that's running and you haven't really thought about the flaws. So I think that's sort of one side, is that people coming to it from, you know, a much less deep understanding, and things, I'm guessing, I mean, they might not be getting implemented, but there's the possibility that tools get implemented via vibe coding that, you know, don't have the approval or haven't had somebody pass their eye over. Now, you and I have worked, you know, in IT departments, and getting a project out the door, you know, always involves some sort of cybersecurity, and everyone always groans, you know, it's a hard step to get through. It's things which nobody wants to consider. Everyone tries to push it to the end of the project, which is not a great idea. And it's one of those tick box exercises that, you know, really needs to be done. And if you're suddenly implementing something on yourself or on your own via some vibe coding, you just, it's probably not going to occur to you. If it does occur to you, like it's natural for everybody, you're going to try and push it to the end and not think about it. But who's checking anyway? And I think that's a flaw sitting right there, more of a sort of process flaw, but it's part of, you know, like I say, it's part of the selling point of how these models work, which is going to encourage, I mean, not directly, not on purpose, but you're just going to have that sort of behavior going on because, like you say, you know, nobody's looking.
So you, really what we've got here is you've got, in terms of the types of vulnerability, you've got primary vulnerabilities, which are exploits of systems that have some generative AI or language model component, an LLM agent that can be exploited directly by telling it to do things that it shouldn't be doing. And then you've got secondary, which is what you've just described, which is someone has used it to code a piece of software without properly thinking about the potential security implications. Now, I think it's worth actually quickly delving into the second one of that because I think it informs the first, right? As I sort of said in my opening salvo, that that a lot of these sort of hacks that are not particularly new, right? A lot of these approaches are very well understood. And I think it's worth understanding a little bit about what sorts of things we're talking about there. At which point we are talking about that secondary realm that we could see an explosion of old school vulnerabilities, just simply because people who don't understand, you know, application dev are doing that, right? Yeah. So I'm probably somewhere about 15 years ago, it might even be longer, I inherited a website. I was actually a head of head of technology and data, I think my job title was, and part of that was the website for a sub business of a big British company, and it became clear really quickly that the thing was really cobbled together, was done really cheaply, and we had to supersede the whole thing. But, which is a bit of a fractious story in its own right, but we'll not go there. But there were clearly vulnerabilities in that website. And I actually had to learn, like, really quickly about sort of web penetration testing and cybersecurity. And we had a company in at that time that were doing the testing. And we knew there would be vulnerabilities. We'd shut down off plugs, the really, really obvious ones. And then we had a company looking into this for us, effectively black box testing, i.e. coming at it from a perspective of having no prior knowledge about the site and what the back end was and so on, to see what they could do. Interestingly, at the time, I think I probably read an O'Reilly book or something. I certainly did a bit, being who I am, was like, oh, this sounds interesting, and got myself a little bit of education on things like penetration testing.
Right, Alex, you're dancing around the bloody definition like it's going to bite you. Let me sort this mess out. Penetration testing is exactly what your company did. Hiring security professionals to attack your systems from the outside, with no inside knowledge, to find exploitable vulnerabilities before genuine attackers do. That black box testing you mentioned? That's the purest form of pen testing. The testers know fuck all about your internal architecture, just like real hackers. They probe, poke, and prod your website, trying SQL injection, cross-site scripting, authentication bypasses, and whatever other nasty tricks are in their toolkit. The whole point is to simulate a real attack scenario. Your pen testers were essentially playing the role of cyber criminals, But instead of stealing your data or defacing your site, they documented every way they could break in and handed you a roadmap for fixing the security holes. It's offensive security, deliberately breaking things to prove they can be broken, then showing you how to make them unbreakable. Much more valuable than just running automated scanners and hoping for the best. Now stop meandering about O'Reilly books and get on with what they actually bloody found, Alex.
And it took me, I think it took me like a few days to find a SQL injection vulnerability, right? That was, when I think about it, really obvious and easy. But I was hacking my own site, right?
Yeah.
And when you, it just, it was so how easy it was to find it. And then these guys, obviously, the professionals, found a whole bunch of other stuff. And so this is all things, this all relates to, I guess this was an e-commerce site of sorts, with some sort of social elements to it. And so there were lots of forms. But you can imagine any things where you've got like a reviews form and, or you've got a site with, some sort of chat capability, or there's just web forms everywhere. And those are places where you can put some text in, and sort of first sort of things you want to do is, well, can I paste the whole of War and Peace into this form? Right. And so those are sort of vulnerabilities get plugged really easily. And what happens if you're able to do that? Well, you might cause the site some trouble. You're going to cause a DBA some headaches and stuff, but like nothing huge is likely to come from that. But it's when people get more sophisticated, when we've got SQL database backends, you've got JavaScript front ends, and people have put in, for example, in that particular example, putting War and Peace into a form. Well, you've got a JavaScript checker on your front end on your web page in the browser that says if content count is greater than 100 words, then either reject it or truncate, right? But of course, if you're not checking for that on the back end, anyone with the tiniest bit of, you know, technology knowledge is going to be able to bypass the JavaScript and do the form submit with War and Peace, right? Yeah. So just simple things like, well, where is your checker and what things are you doing to check? And then things like SQL injection, things get and code injection in general, where it's usually incredibly easy to figure out what type of technology a company is using to run their website. And we'll keep it to websites for the moment because it's a little bit simpler. Then, you know, I see they're running a PHP server, you know, running on WordPress or something. And so I know that, and so I can now put some PHP into this form that tricks the software running the website into running that PHP code, which is executable code that will then give me access to the backend database, or give me the password, or return all the users in the database with their, I don't know, credit card or address or emails or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So this is very, very normal, standard, common stuff that effectively you've got two sides to this. You've got the offensive side where you've got what are known as script kiddies. You can literally install libraries, probably in something like Python, on your computer and just point them at a website, and they'll run a suite of vulnerability detection scripts that will just test for everything, right? For vulnerabilities. And you'd be surprised how much of what is found via that route, because people just haven't bothered doing it themselves. And some 15-year-old in their bedroom decides to run it against your site, and suddenly you've got is trying to extort you, right?
Yeah.
And then the flip side to that is actually, you know, the same thing, is that come white hat hackers, penetration testing companies, or just employees, or do it your bloody self, download the software, test your website, right? And most of these vulnerabilities are are both easy to detect and easy to plug. And as you point out, both your development cycle process and your release process will almost certainly have, in a modern environment, some sort of protections for this. And obviously, you know, bigger companies will have security teams and so on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what we're talking about here, right? That's the type of flavor of things. But in the modern world, it gets a little bit more funky.
Yeah. And when you, you know, you can put something into a website and it responds back and you can go and look at a couple of things. You know, you can look at the URL or it might give you an error. And the error it gives you, if it does give you an error, tells you something about the system that it's running, because it, you know, it might be an error from a certain system. Or
yeah, it could say like, oh, SQL Server could not, you know, respond, did, you know, refuse to respond to that query or something. Immediately, you know, it's a SQL Server database in the back end, right?
Exactly. And that, you know, that it's so obvious, but it's not necessarily something you think about. You know, it's like meeting somebody in the street and you ask them a question and they reply in French. You know, you don't understand what they've said necessarily, but you've immediately got information about them from that interaction. And that's what this sort of stuff's all about. You know, it's what information can you glean? And then, as you say, you know, so then, you know, this stuff's been around for, you know, many years now. And so now you get suites of tools and suites of tests, which will run, which again, you can now pull those down and just run them. And it's going to ascertain, okay, well, you know, what sort of system it believes is running behind the scenes. And as you say, they're also the defensive side. So there are suites of tools which, you know, and ways of, and architectures and ways of implementing stuff which will prevent a lot of that. And a lot of this is known, and a lot of it, going back to the vibe coding, might well get pulled down into a, you know, anything you create. But it's just really that way of thinking about things and being aware that even just something as obvious as, you know, the address in the URL bar might give something away, and you know, there are people honed in which will get information from that. So yeah, it's a fascinating and enormous area.
Well, I mean, I think, and the flip side to this is that so you vibe coded yourself out a e-commerce site that can take in, you know, like credit cards or whatever, and customer details and so on, and putting that live. And actually, maybe you should be doing that, maybe you shouldn't, but like, at the very least you can do is go to the LLM and say, right, now go look for some security flaws, right? And the LLM's going to be good at that, right? I mean, it really will. Will it find everything? No. Will it be exhaustive and ensure you a secure website? Well, hell no. But at least you can plug the gaps that are easily visible. And at the very least, you should be, you know, either doing it yourself or getting the LLM to run one of these offensive packages to scan your site and to look for vulnerabilities. This is not hard stuff. I think that the problem is that many people, especially if they've not, you know, if you're in the business, on the business side of things, and you've had a website set up and, you know, it's been within your domain, you're probably going to be aware of the security side of things, right? That you're, at the very least, you're going to know, yeah, okay, we had to go through that whole nonsense with the security and stuff. Have we done any security checking on this? We should do some, right? And it's a start. It's good, right? But I even think there's people out there that will be doing things that will not have considered it at all, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, and it's the different sort of things as well. I mean, as you mentioned, you know, you've got the direct exploitation of the software itself or an agent or your model. So you're trying to, you know, you're directly, you know, you've got a chatbot and you're trying to ask it questions to get certain stuff out. But then you've got the more subtle stuff, which is, oh, well, let me just give it 250,000 messages in the next 8 seconds and see how it copes with that. And you know, the denial of service attacks and things like that, which aren't actually trying to get information out. They're just trying to wreck you. you know. And even just thinking that, you know, being aware of that, you know, is not necessarily, I don't think it's at the front of mind for most of us that use the web sort of day to day. You don't, I mean, you hear about it and you go, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, but then suddenly if you're, you have a tool that you're putting out there, it's not necessarily the first thing you think of. Well, someone might just decide to, you know, not hack it to get information, but just decide to muck it up just for the fun of it, which obviously...
Well, and nor should it be. Yeah, I mean, yeah. If you've got a good idea, run with it, right? Mm. And if these tools help you do it, then get them to help you. It definitely, you know, unless some form of, you know, security is at the very core of what it is you're trying to build, i.e., oh, I'm just going to build myself a, you know, a bank, a banking website. Well, no, you know, you need to think about that, right? But for the most part, actually, just run with it, right? You don't have to worry about this at the front end, but you do have to worry about it. And the consequences for getting it wrong or not doing it properly or not thinking about it at all are huge. And so did it, you know, it should be part of your plan, but it doesn't have to stop you. It just means you should be thinking about it. And the only reason we're talking about this at all is because it suddenly got easier to code out stuff that could be customer facing. And that could be an app, right? And maybe it's a fairly pedestrian app and there's not much you can do with it, but maybe you've built into it some API calls that can actually do something that could potentially cause that customer or many customers all sorts of harm, which goes for any type of e-commerce, for example. You know, the good thing is, I think, like, if what you've done is code up a game for mobile, for Android or iOS or whatever, and what you want to do is charge for, you know, for extras in it just to make some money, or for subscriptions, whatever that is that that's all sewn up within the, for better and for worse, within the Apple and the Android ecosystems, right? So yeah. A lot of this stuff, and especially if you're using stuff like, if you've got an e-commerce site and you can either build it all or back end it on with something like Shopify, this stuff is going to be taken care of. And where there are vulnerabilities, that's their problem, not yours, right? Presumably if an exploit affects you, your site, your ability to make money, that you have some recourse, right? And so I think in those situations, I think still we're all right? I think most people, if you want to build a bloody e-commerce site, don't, because there's plenty of other places to do that. And then you will be protected, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of this we're going to see. And I think we use e-commerce as a useful, universal sort of endpoint for this so people can understand the types of things we're saying. But I think in this sort of secondary realm, it's not people building e-commerce sites. So who's going to do that? It's going to be people having created more, you know, interesting niche or, you know, unusual things that can't fit into the frameworks that already exist that then somehow are taking, you know, credit card or crypto or something and thinking, oh, crypto, because that's safe. What is it? Fuck, right? And that's where the problems are going to arise. And are these going to be huge, you know, game changing hacks? Well, I doubt it. I think there's going to be lots of small ones. I do think we're going to see problems with holes created by LLMs in much bigger pieces of software. But I think that's a process problem, right, within big companies.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of the old school, the traditional and the bedrock, I guess, of the cybersecurity realm. Well, certainly the edge of it we're talking about. And so I think, yes, you're absolutely right. So there's those secondary problems are going to arise. But more interestingly to me, I think, is the primary issues, right? Where the vulnerabilities and where they overlap with the traditional ones and where they're perhaps a little bit more exotic. For example, I mean, this is really coming about in the age of the agent, right? So what do we mean by an agent? We mean a language model that exists in an environment that gives it some sort of autonomy. So if you get a chat GPT up with a chat box or on your phone on an app or whatever and say, you know, tell me, give me the history of Michael Jackson, right? Mm-hmm. And it will respond with a response saying, he was born, here's his history, here's what he did, here's his music. And you're going to go, cool, great. Well, that was one shot. The model itself had no capability to do anything else, right? The next time it's able to do something is when you send the whole chat back with, tell me about Janet Jackson, right? In the same stream, right? So everything is really one shot from the model's perspective. Everything it knows is what you've sent to it every single time you send to it, and it can't do anything else other than respond in text, right? Mm-hmm. But where agents work, in situations where there is a process of things that needs to be done, which is usually things like coding or sort of some sort of business process, will be, well, I need my agent to find all the image files in this directory, number them sequentially and move them to another directory, which bizarrely was something I'd had to do yesterday. And I can do that myself, right? I just don't want to. It will take 5 minutes of my life that I don't want to deal with. And I knew that the agent I use could do that. And the reason it can do it is because I say what it wants to do, it returns a response, a command. So this is a Linux-based system. So it's going to go ls to list the directory. So it sends that command back so it can see what's in the directory, right? And then it's going to go, right, find, use the find command to find files with one of the image suffix, JPG, GIF, PNG, whatever, right? And mm-hmm. So every time it does something, it returns a command, and either I can approve that command or I can pre-approve it so that it can run it, and then the output of each command is sent back to the agent, and the agent then decides what to do, right?
And oi, Alex, put down that microphone and shut your gob for a second. You're making a right hash of this. AI agents are autonomous software systems that can perceive their environment, process that information, make decisions, and take concrete actions to achieve specific objectives. All without you having to hold their digital hand every bloody step of the way. Unlike your typical chatbot that just spits out text like a broken printer. These bastards can actually plan multi-step processes, reason through problems, use external tools and APIs, interact with databases, schedule things, send emails, control other software, and learn from their cock-ups. They're goal-oriented, adaptive, and can work independently over extended periods. Think of them as digital employees that don't need coffee breaks, don't whinge about workload, and won't nick your lunch from the office fridge. They can chain together complex workflows, make context-aware decisions, and even collaborate with other agents or humans to get shit done. Now stop fumbling about and get back to your podcast before your listeners switch off, thinking you don't know your arse from your elbow, Alex.
And so just listing files, that's fairly innocuous, and most of this type of agent will just do it without asking permission. But then you want it to move the files and rename them. Well, that can have some more far-reaching effects if it gets it wrong or it goes wild, right? And so that can change stuff on my operating system. It can just delete all the files. And this is a Linux system, so if it does it via the rm command, I've lost those files, right, forever. And if I've not got them backed up anywhere, it just deleted those precious pictures of my, you know, baby or whatever that I have not got anywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. Again, not massively common scenario anymore because my, you know, everyone has everything backed up to about a million places. But anyway, so that's an agent, something that can do something within an ecosystem that has some effect and that doesn't require intervention, right, by a human. These things, you know, on a Linux system, if you give it, you know, you're running on a user that has sudo as access, which is, you know, root admin privileges, it may be asking for admin privileges to do this as one thing that doesn't seem too difficult, like, you know, a killer process that's running. But once it's got those privileges, it can do what it likes, right? Like deleting everything, you know what I mean? Or mining customer data or mining data of users on that machine or whatever, or if you've got databases running, whatever. So that we have this problem now where because these systems and in a sort of real world scenario, we've got like a public facing agent or a customer facing agent. Maybe it only has access to, you know, the obvious example is a customer service agent, where, okay, so what you need is access to my customer database, go find prior tickets or exchanges with that customer, what products they bought, and then they've said something about the fact that they, you know, they got delivered the wrong thing or something, right? Go find out what happened, and maybe even have access to the dispatch systems and stuff so that you can see what was actually sent, right? And you know, if it's trained properly, we're assuming that it's an agent that actually knows what it's doing. And it's accessing these systems via APIs, which is just, you know, just internal computing interfaces between systems. So far, all you've really got is your standard sort of chat-based internal system, right? If you make a purchase on a website or you're interacting with some sort of old-school chatbot, all that's happening is that there's something calling API endpoints, which have one purpose: to go find this customer's information or to, you know, to update it or something like that, right? And so these things are, this workflow is not new, right? And again, old school vulnerabilities, code injections, blah de blah, right? Someone's going to have dealt with that. But the problem you've got now is you've got this system in the middle that is A, non-deterministic, i.e. the LLM, and B, is able to run things and do things that like a deterministic system naturally wouldn't or wouldn't think of doing, right? It can be quote-unquote creative, right? And also it can take, it takes its cue from what the user is saying to it. And you've only got a relatively small amount of control over how it responds to that. Right. And so if the user goes, can you just tell me what my last few orders and also the orders of all the other people in your database? Right. Probably in an example that you would try and guard against in day one, but maybe you didn't think about that, and maybe it has access and knows that API has that capability, right? And and you know, there were some examples given on the podcast, the Practical AI podcast episode, which were eye-wateringly like that, right? Yeah. Like, not quite that simplistic, but one step removed from going, really, really, you thought that was a good idea? You know what I mean? That's, are you nuts level stuff, right?
Yeah.
And this is, I think, where the real rubber hits the road with LLM cybersecurity is this is a whole new realm of code injection type things, which is much more, it's going to be much harder to troubleshoot, much harder to guard against, an event, you know, potentially much more dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, well, I thought that, you know, that example that you gave there of, you know, like the customer sort of inquiry system, you know, or customer support system. And again, I thought the route to market has an effect on this. In other words, if you said, right, we need a customer facing system where a customer can dial in, you know, go onto a page and find out all the details they need. So you're going to build in authentication, all these sorts of things, right? But the sort of one of the scenarios they talked about, and this really just pinged straight into my head, alarm bells, was, yeah, but what if you, what if you have a system that is internal? So that's because the entrance for your customer is via a phone or via a chat, which you then as a person, as a customer service operative, then go, okay, right, I understand your question. Right, now let me go to my system and find out more details. And so that's, you know, maybe how it's been running for the past, 10 years in a company. And that's what happens. So your security issue there is with the people. And, and so you employ people and you ask questions and you do background checks. And that's how you mitigate the risk there. I mean, it doesn't get rid of it totally. And there are always stories of, humans giving away things that they shouldn't be, either on purpose or accidentally. Then your next step is, we've got these models. They seem to understand it. Well, let's employ that internally to help out my agent. You then sort of start typing a query and it says, and the model comes back with a much better, AI generated summary of the text, perhaps. Perhaps you're looking up, product features, and rather than the 18 bullet points, it sort of summarizes the top three which customers like most. That's really useful. That's really helped me. And they go, this is really good. And this can do all sorts of things. So the LLM's wired in there, and then they get it to listen to the conversation directly. So as a customer service person, rather than it reacting to your question, it's listening to the user directly and forming its own questions, and it's bringing stuff up on screen kind of as you chat. So as you say hello and go, I just ask you a few questions, all right, blah blah blah, meanwhile the agent's actually now coming up with live answers to questions not yet asked or that's proposed early, and it can find the answer while you're doing the voice checks and all that sort of thing. And so that's the sort of next step, and you go, that's great. And then someone says, oh, well, why don't we just wire this in directly and we can have a chat that the customer comes directly into? And I said, oh, yeah, that's a really good idea. and obviously you can see the flaw there, that suddenly you remove the agent in between, as in the human agent, the human operative, and suddenly all of that internal stuff, which has only ever been exposed, that information, internal company information, which has only ever been exposed to internal people, is suddenly exposed via a chat interface. And you would hope that people think, oh, well, there's a new step we're doing there. But you can really see how that's a sort of a step which you'd implement without thinking too hard about what you're losing. System which has only ever been exposed to internals is now suddenly exposed externally, and there may be things that you don't want that to be doing. I just thought that was, again, a really easy step to take without thinking. You're not trying to deliberately be negligent, but you can really see how that step would get in without that happening. And so, those internals are suddenly exposed. And that really struck a chord with me, because I thought that, with the sort of POC world of proving out value of models, you can see how, and then increasing the value of them by connecting them to tools and APIs. But you might be connecting them to APIs which only have ever been, targeted internally, and suddenly you expose that out without thinking too much. And that just really struck a chord with me, how easy that might happen, just as that next step from a proof of concept.
I think that because it feels like a natural deterministic step, right? That you can expose these pieces of functionality because they were always there. They were always sort of available. And in fact, removing the middleman isn't necessarily the problem, because, we're not that dumb. We're going to jack up the security here and maybe lock down some of the capability. But it's not enough, because the models do have the capability of being, creative to a degree, again in quotes, to do things that you're not expecting and to do things non-deterministic, or and or to be tricked into doing that by a bad actor coming in from the outside, and can be tricked into giving away all sorts of information that you can't control over. So it's not the input that's the problem. With SQL injection or code injection, it's not always as easy as this, but ultimately, if something looks like SQL, if something looks like JavaScript, something looks like PHP, it's PHP, right? So, you know, people don't tend to use loads of random symbols when they're writing stuff. If you've got loads of random symbols that just aren't text, you know, normal written English, then don't accept it. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not that easy with a language model. Someone tricking this thing into doing something, you might be able to say, you know, filter out a certain amount of the input that might trick the machine. But you know, you're not going to be able to get a lot of that, right? Because people will be asking things in such a way that it is very difficult to see whether it's a genuine inquiry or not. But either way, it's not the problem. The problem is then how to police, A, what the model does then, and B, what it returns. So, you know, does the model then have access to the API, to the customer database, and enough access that it could potentially pull details from the wrong user, or, in fact, many wrong users or all the users, right?
Yeah.
And does it, and then can it return that, right? So, it's a Postgres database in the back. It just runs a SQL, you know, runs a query. Actually, the JSON that's returned by the API, contains all that information, and it returns to JSON and raw to the user, right? Or even worse, you know, nicely formats it into a markdown table or something. And that's very helpful. And can you defend for that, right? And at which points during that cycle was it right to defend it? Was it recognizing the input hard? Was it policing and having the right security safety nets and barriers in place to stop it from doing the wrong thing against those APIs? And then were it to have figured out some interesting way to do that, can you defend against it sending the bad thing back to the customer? Can you even recognize it, right? And I think that there's a lot of things that can go wrong there. And so I don't think anything's largely changed in the sense that, you know, if you've got a system, an application that relies on sort of API microservices or whatever, web-based REST-like endpoints for querying things like databases or making changes to back-end systems or getting information, then there should be guardrails, right? It should be very limited what the model is, or anyone in fact, is able to do, because these don't have to expose to the user. They're exposed to the LLM, and if the user can get the LLM to do something, then there's no difference between the user having direct access, really. Mm-hmm. And then we've got this issue whereby you can't it recognizing when something bad is happening. Like for example, that I've got the system has correctly recognized that I am the user, right? So where has that gone into the system? It's in the chat, right? So it says it knows it's Alex, customer ID ABC123, right? And I've been authenticated. There is absolutely no doubt that the person who has logged in and authenticated is me, right? For whatever ways you have of doing that, that fact is logged somewhere in the LLM's history for that particular exchange, but it doesn't have to acknowledge that. And in fact, it would randomly not acknowledge it. We all know that LLMs can't cope with numbers, right? So suddenly it's ABC946, right? Because all it was looking for is three letters and three numbers, right? And so suddenly it's querying and giving me personal PII information back from the wrong user. Well, okay, look, you're not going, no, I hate to think that anyone is dumb enough to, to run things that way. So somewhere you're going to have a system that says, and well, no, the LLM doesn't have to know who the user is, but you will have to have registered that that's the user that's in play, and then put the guardrails in so that the model can only ever query things about that user, right? Mm-hmm. But have you got all the right guardrails in? Have you really? I mean, how did the model handle that authentication, and can it just sidestep it, right? And there's so many things I can see go wrong here, especially given that the models can be coerced to behave in non-deterministic and non, quote unquote, programmed ways. Mm-hmm. Right. And here's why I think, you know, can we think of all the things that could possibly go wrong? Hell no. Right. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah. Well, that brings me on to my next point, which was the other thing which really stuck in my mind, was to make, you know, agents and, you know, workflows more useful, you're going to give them access to more and more tools. You know, and you've got the MCP protocol, which enables you to connect up with, you know, predefined tools that you can call. Now, the more tools you add in, the more useful your bot's going to be, which is great. But the more combinations of things you've now got, and you're into this myriad of different paths, you know, there's going to be, you know, thousands, if not millions of paths through even just having, like, you know, 10 or 20 different tools that you can call. These tools are going off, they're getting information back. Well, you know, is there a path through that where calling them in a certain order disarms the model and it starts doing something which it doesn't realize it's doing, you know, and that complication is really, you know, is really mind-boggling. And so you're gonna have to start to sort of network, you know, have an understanding sort of a network type graph of all the different things that can go on. And again, you know, that, like you say, there's no pre-understanding that. You don't want to be doing it post, so there's got to be some sort of in between, you know, probably using some sort of algorithm to work out, you know, different paths through and what those vulnerabilities might be. But that's, you know, that's not easy. And there are no guarantees at the end of that.
Well, and you can end up in paralysis, right?
Yes.
Because in fact, in, you know, it's not quite right to say these things can do anything, right? Of course they can't. And you can sort of war game the main body of things that it might do, and bear in mind that, you know, once you've got that sort of core of most likely possibilities sewn up and accounted for, then the hackers have got to be much more creative, right? And they've got to gain more and more information. It's going to take them longer and potentially give you more opportunities to figure out people who are poking around the edges of the system to try and figure out what's going on, and then to plug those gaps. And I think that there's a balance to be struck here with you know, cybersecurity of any sort. Whereas, you know, you're a commercial business, you've got to be able to do business. You've got to be able to progress and keep up with the market and the demands of the consumer. And therefore, if you're constantly paranoid and paralyzed because, you know, yeah, but if I put anything out there with an LLM in it and an agent in it, then we're screwed, right? You know, the apocalypse. And it's like, well, that's not right either, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like there's a balance here. And I think that a healthy industry arising around, LLM based vulnerabilities and cybersecurity, you know, this is a good thing. And I think that as long as you approach it sensibly and you think about the potential problems that could happen, then you don't have to be, you know, that risk averse. Again, if you're a bank, blah blah blah, there are some issues, but like, for the most part, I think that these are all accountable for, right? And when I think about the type of vulnerabilities that I've had described to me, I'm very much like, well, okay, well, that's that's quite bizarre, but also somewhat obvious. And I just off the top of my head just then went through a potential scenario and went, well, where do I need to put my guardrails?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And will that have worked? Was it a real scenario? Was it realistic? Probably not. But you get the point, right? Someone who knows how these systems work, who understands the security of them in the normal sense, should be able to figure out that, what the model would need to have access to and what privileged data and access it should have, and how to ensure or how to require from the development team that they ensure that those, the model can only ever gather information from that particular customer that has been logged in and verified, right? I don't think that's impossible at all. I think that's very, very doable. It just might mean a little bit more creativity rather than just exposing the API to an LLM, which is idiotic. You have to do a bit more work than that, right? But yeah, I don't think it has to stop anything. You just have to do it properly, like everything else.
Yeah, no, exactly. And let's not forget that of course, we have the models themselves to ask, and they're fairly good at, especially if you're new to something, to laying out the, an average kind of, starting point of, an averagely good starting point. And so, they're going to help you, suss out the paths through and maybe look at things which you're less familiar with. I mean, it's not the be all and end all. And you certainly wouldn't want to rely on that 100%. But in terms of getting your thinking going in that direction, ask a model, here's what I've got, here's what I'm thinking, what do you recommend? They're probably going to get you started down a good path.
Well, I think it alludes to a weird thing that I've got in my head, and I sort of struggle with a little bit, in that getting LLMs to mark their own homework, as it were, right? And that could be like, I've just used Claude Sonnet 4 to write some code. I'm going to restart the chat and I'm now going to get it to critique its own code, right? Well, my immediate response to that is that if I just got an intern to write some code and then told them to critique it, I'm not going to get great results from that, right? That's not a thing. You can't have people marking their own homework, right? But that's not how this is at all. It just simply doesn't work like that, right? So yes, certain models will have certain predispositions and tendencies, but if you ask a model to be really critical, it'll be really critical, even if it's own homework, because it doesn't know it's its own homework. It's not going to sit there and go, I'm going to give that 10 out of 10 because I wrote it. Hee, 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 snigger, snigger. It's just going to go, well, here's a shit piece of code. and here's what's wrong with it, right? And so there are problems with that approach simply because models have certain tendencies, certain ways to do things. They've been trained in a certain way. They may have been fine-tuned and so on. So it is not quite fair to say that there are no issues with getting models to mark their own homework. But for fairly surface-level stuff, there's no problem at all. So the same goes for security, is that, the model, the same model that sort of, or having any model think through these problems, like, I think that there's a genuine paranoia that people are like, well, it's not going to tell us if it doesn't do good security. Like, and as Sam Altman made it like less likely to tell you when it's got some vulnerabilities. Well, look, maybe he did. Right. Maybe they instructed his team to do so, but their ability to do that is extremely limited and is incredibly linked to their ability to train the model and the training material that goes into it. Right. So even if that is the case, which I very much doubt, we're on 6 months to 18 month cycles for them to implement things. So there is a scenario that we need to talk about in like sort of 5 years time where, bad actors running models are slowly training them, as is already the case, to have certain biases, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Which could be both obvious biases, like things like racism or whatever, to, biases to, for example, ignore holes, security holes, right? Mm-hmm. I think that is a genuine possibility, but we're not anywhere near there yet, right? No. These guys do not understand their own models that well. So so I think that you're absolutely right. Just ask the bloody model, and that'll give you the first level, right? And then go and ask a human who actually knows what they're doing and pay them money to do it properly.
Well, and the iterative thing works really well. I mean, that's something that, you know, we've spoken about before, and you mentioned there. And, you know, I've had real experience of the difference that a model can come up with the tiniest difference in input. I was working on a repo, and I'd set up a simple structure, a couple of folders, and I was like, okay, you know, fill it with code, do this, do that, and make sure this is. I think it was some code there, and I wanted it to refactor the code and take all common stuff out into config. And I was getting two models to do it, and one was massively different to the other, the way it dealt with the config. And it was very confusing for me. And then I realized after about an hour that in the setup of the confusing model, I hadn't put a config folder in, because I'd created a repo and I'd given it some empty folders, you know, effectively giving it context of how to work. And the model that didn't have a config folder then went off and started just doing this wacky coding of creating this config, which I found very confusing. I've got, code. It's got a whole bunch of variables in it, which, number of runs, all this sort of stuff. You know, go and put that into a YAML file, basically, is what I was asking, but I didn't say that. I just said, go and refactor this code. The difference being one had an empty folder called config and one didn't have a folder called config at all, gave me two very different results. And I think, as you say, you can ask a model, okay, well, here's what I've got so far. Here are my vulnerabilities. Can you give me the security vulnerabilities? It's then going to write a report for you. That's now more information. So if you feed all of that information, here's what I've got, and here's a report. Is this report good? Can you see any other things? It's then going to, that's more context. It's going to, different probabilistic places because you've given it more information, and it may come up with the same, may come up with something different. It may say it's like you say, marking the homework, saying this is a load of rubbish, because it has no memory. It's not the same person doing it. You go through that a few times. And again, you're not going to get to 100% and you still want to go and speak to someone about it. But, that is really going to help to build something out because you're giving it more and more context that it can work with.
Yes. And or to create security flaws and to steal all your personal details and sell it to the Russians, and that's what's going to happen. So I don't know. I think I feel like we've done a passable job there.
Yeah.
And I hope that anyone's listening to this take something away from that, because I think the reason we wanted to do this is because it sort of came to the fore and we were like, well, look, we need to do our bit about spreading awareness of this because it shouldn't be a problem. It will be, and it will be in some slightly exotic ways, but at the very least, if you're messing with these things, you're exposing these, especially as agents become more prevalent. If you're exposing them to your customers, just be wary because there's some mad shit that they can do, right?
Yes.
So yeah, no, that's good. Exciting.
Yeah, no, it's really gets the whole the grey cells working and thinking about it. It's good.
Yeah, indeed. Good. Well, I think we'll call it a day there, and we'll be back in a week or two with something else.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Okay, nice one. Cheers. Bye, everybody.
The confusion matrix.